scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla in a left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk. Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Welcome to day one on the ice of Calgary Flames training camp. And welcome to hour one of Flames Talk on this Thursday, September 22nd. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. Yes, we're back in the Hot Stove Lounge and happy to be bringing you Flames Talk from our little fortress of solitude. Lots to get to on hour one. We're going to hear from Jonathan Huberdeau as he spoke to the media on day one of training camp. We'll hear Daryl Sutter's opening training camp address. But before we get anywhere, let's say hello to our co-host for the rest of the week and next week as well, our good buddy from NHL.com at Daily Hive, Aaron Vickers, is with us here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome as well. What's up, Vixie?
Patrick, isn't it nice to be back? Back in the building, back watching hockey, back being in scrums, back doing one-on-ones, and back doing what we love. It's great to be back in the Saddle Dome. Go ahead.
Super normal, man. We did media scrums. Soon we'll be back in the locker room. They're going to let us unwashed back in the locker room with the professional hockey players. What's going to happen?
I think the first thing that's going to happen is the media is going to request a gum and or mint sponsor. Or maybe the players are going to request that on behalf of the local media. But shares in Dentine is going to go through the roof in Calgary. Mark my words.
What are you saying?
I'm just saying, hey, a little professional courtesy from player or from media member to player. Got to, like, getting back in the dressing room, getting back face to face.
As paranoid about that as maybe anything I do in my, like, as paranoid as I am about saying something completely offside by accident on the radio,
which happens,
or swearing on the radio and having my career end, which
is how it's going to end.
Inevitably, that will be how it ends. Yes. I've already prepared myself at some point. I will say something thinking a mic is off, and then I will get fired. It's just going to happen one day. But like that, I don't want to be like, well, so I have always got some sort of mint around. Just and today, for I knew that I was going to talk to a couple players person, and I had a latte, and I was like, I was going to drink it. Then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wait to drink this until after media because I don't want them to have to deal with that.
I haven't done a full deep dive on this, but if you have a peppermint latte, will you smell like peppermint or do you smell more like the coffee element of it?
I think peppermint tea, I think you're okay. I don't know about the peppermint latte, though.
I guess we'll find out.
Anyway, that's what you come to Flames Talk to
hear
about is media members' breath. Which media member has the worst breath? More on that on hour one of Flames Talk. We got to see players on the ice, and some questions were answered. In about 5-6 minutes, we're going to hear from Daryl Sutter. He spoke to the media to get things started on day one. The head coach, the reigning Jack Adams winner, is going to get things started. But one of the big questions I had coming into this year's camp: were Lindholm and Huberdeau going to play together, and were they going to be together from the start of training camp? The answer to that question is yes. And if that was going to be an answered question, if that was going to be a yes, who was going to be on the right side? Was it going to be Tyler Toffoli? The answer to that question is yes. That was kind of your unquestioned number one line. I think that was one of the spots that people really took interest in, Lindholm between Huberdeau and Toffoli.
Yes, for me, it was more of a given, perhaps, that it would be, you know, your best playmaker and one of the NHL's best playmakers with your leading returning goal scorer in Elias Lindholm. I thought I would be more surprised if they weren't together to start camp than if they were. The bigger question for me was going to be who's on that third member of that top line, specifically on that right wing. And to me, it just makes sense to try Tyler Toffoli there first. You look at his scoring prowess. I think throughout his NHL career, if you look at his goals per game, he averages out to about a 26 or a 27 goal per year guy. And it just makes sense that if you've got Jonathan Huberdeau, who led the NHL in assists and set an NHL record with 85 assists, most by a left winger in NHL history, then you might as well have another shooter opposite Lindholm on that line. And in talking to Jonathan Huberdeau today, he made mention he's not sure that he's ever played with two right shot players on a line. So this gives him the opportunity to either feed it into the middle and you know, send it to a guy that scored over 40 goals last year, or maybe send it over just a little bit further to another right shot that can corral it. And, you know, who knows, maybe we end up with a 30-goal scorer in this instance.
We'll dive more into that top line as hour one continues. The top defense pairing, or the first one that went through, was Chris Tanev on the right side and Mackenzie Weegar on the left side. Weegar, Tanev, Hanifin, Anderson was your top four on defense. I know a lot of people were very interested to see how that was going to shake out and where Weegar was going to fit. You know, probably on the left side, but on the left side with who? We know he's a right shot. He can play both sides. It gives him some options, and one of those options is to put together kind of, I think, one of the best potential best-on-best top pairings in the NHL. We know what Tanev is capable of doing. We know that he can go head-to-head with the best players, and while he doesn't bring a ton in terms of offensive numbers, we just the dude can lock down anybody. He's as good defensively, the defensive metrics, as good as anybody in the NHL. Plus, he skates well. He helps their transition game. And then you add a guy like Weegar, who has a little bit maybe more in terms of the offensive upside, still brings the skating and the defensive metrics off the charts as well for most of his time in Florida. That pairing definitely jumped off the page.
Yeah, this is sort of the most obvious way from my perspective to start things in camp. You've got Weegar, a right shot, as you mentioned. Tanev, a right shot, as you mentioned. That part element of it, I don't know how much I'm in love with it and how much it even matters anymore. We are, of course, very familiar playing the left side, left, righty, wherever you stand on that debate, whether you're an NHL coach that likes having two shots facing each other or you're okay with going two of the same hand. But yeah, Chris Tanev, like, what a security blanket for any defenseman on this roster, never mind Mackenzie Weegar, who's a potential number one with this group. But just the things that Chris Tanev can do to stabilize a newcomer coming in, you know, new city, new team, new coach, new systems. I'm really curious to see what happens if this pair sticks together and then, you know, the reins are off Weegar to maybe wander around a little bit more, explore the offensive side of his game. I mean, he had over 40 points last year in minimal power play time. So if you stick him with, like, far and away your best defensive defenseman, that just gives him even more opportunity to freelance up ice, and we'll see how things shake out. How do you feel about the lefty-righty?
When you've got a guy like Weegar who can play the right side, but when you're deep on the right side already with Anderson and Tanev, I don't think any one of those three guys should be out of the top four. So I think you're fine putting him in as the left side guy, even though he plays the right. I don't think there's any issue with that, and I think it's the smart move because I think you want all of Hanifin, Anderson, Weegar, and Tanev in your top four. And if that means you've got to go righty on the left in your top four and maybe lefty on the right on your third pairing, I think you live with that.
I mean, it's a good place to start, and we can get into the debate on how the defensive pair should shake down a little bit more later in the week. I'm just curious about what that third pair suddenly looks like if you have that as your top four.
Here were all of the line combinations from the first group. The 9:30 a.m. group on this Thursday was the NHL group. It was the group that had all of the quote-unquote NHL regulars and a couple of guys fighting for spots. There were a couple of guys who were in that mix in the second midday group that went at 11:45. Connor Mackey was in that middle group. Jacob Pelche was in that middle group. But in terms of the group one lines and pairings, Markstrom and Vladar were your goalies. Lindholm with Huberdeau and Toffoli. Nazem Kadri played between Cody Eakin on the left and Sonny Milano on the right. Michael Backlund had Dylan Dubé on his left and Blake Coleman on his right. Kevin Rooney, now with the Flames, was centering Milan Lucic on the left and Brett Ritchie on the right. And then you had Adam Rzyczka on, I guess, what would have been a fifth line. Martin Pospisil on the left. And Trevor Lewis was on the right. Your D pairings, Weegar, Tanev, Hanifin, Anderson, Zadorov with newcomer Nick Meloche, and Valimaki with Stone. That's how it all shook out. And the one thing that I would, caution's the wrong word, but it's day one of training camp. And I will always use 1 year ago as my example. 1 year ago, Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan were on one line, and Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm were on another line, and they had different wingers throughout camp, But very rarely during camp or the preseason did Lindholm, Tkachuk, and Gaudreau play together. For day one of the regular season, those three were together and they were never split up. So things will change. I think you'll see different groupings on Saturday. I think you'll see the same groupings on day two on Friday. But things will change, and there'll be definitely some tweaking as training camp goes along. So don't read too much into any one set of groupings. It very much is a work in progress, evolution thing, building towards October 13th.
Yeah, we're most definitely going to see some change, if not just to see some change. This coaching staff obviously putting a lot of new pieces together. What better time than training camp to start exploring some things? I wouldn't be shocked if we see, you know, Huberto and Kadri at some point together. We're going to mix in Andrew Mangiapane at some point in this. We're going to see, you know, maybe we see Blake Coleman on the top line or on the second. Like, there's so many moving parts here that you want to take a test run on all of these guys. You want to see who fits well with who. It's all about building chemistry. It's all about mixing and matching. The Calgary Flames and Daryl Sutter aren't trying to nail down their opening night lines on day one of training camp.
Yep, exactly. Okay, let's hear from Daryl Sutter, head coach of the Calgary Flames, spoke on this Thursday, day one on the ice at training camp. What's he seen so far? Conditioning, line combinations, and a whole lot more. Here's the head coach as he spoke following the second session Thursday.
Good to be back, Daryl.
Yep. You know, the players have been here for, other than one or two guys, have been here for at least a week skating together, so this just sort of just ramps it up for them.
Were you happy with the work the guys put in during the summer?
Yep. I mean, we haven't got all the results, obviously, from yesterday, but based on just the visual part of it, I would say that.
Do you know who won fitness testing yet?
Pardon?
We don't know who won fitness testing yet?
No.
Yeah, the line combinations, we get that they're going to change throughout camp. You want to see what you see. But can you just give us the rationale behind the top two lines? You like Toffoli, why on that top line?
I think just experience and the right shot part of it.
And the second line, we're all assuming Bonnie's kind of.
Yeah, that's just going to, you know what, we're being really careful with Naz here the first week or so. He played plays a lot of hockey, right? So he's not going to play for, he won't play a game for a while, so we'll just kind of move him around. And I want to make sure those pro tryout guys get a really good opportunity.
Are you looking to see if Sonny Milano, he said that the organization told him there was a top nine slot open. Were you hoping to see it to him?
See it in a hurry. I mean, we play four games in 7 days, so get the opportunity, take advantage of it.
How much flexibility does it give you as a coach to have a guy like Mackenzie Weegar who can play well on both sides?
Yeah, I think it's more, with those guys coming in, quite honest, more finding, for example, with him, finding partner for Naz, finding the right fit for Johnny to find the right fit. That's what's important. Kevin, Rooney, find the right fit. Those guys coming in are good players, and they're coming off really good years. They're coming off career years, so finding the right fit for them is like when you say that he can play both sides. Yeah, we got to find the right partner for him.
What are your first impressions of Jonathan Huberto?
Pardon?
What's your first impression of Huberto?
He's a real business, all business type of player, I think.
Is that something you appreciate in a guy
who
could be seen top
players are always, coaches always appreciate low maintenance players.
For a player that came in mid-season like Tyler did last year, now to Tyler. get a full camp, how much can
it's
that
important.
Be helpful?
It's important. There's, you know what, Tyler, and there's two or three of that guys in that age group. He's probably the youngest ones that would have liked to have done more last year. The type of players they are. So those are the guys that we're looking for. To as important as it is that that 23 to 28 age group takes another step in terms of their maturity on ice and development, it's important that those three or four older guys too get back to their career average or maintain where they're at least.
Daryl, you didn't have a captain last year. Do you think it's important to have one this year, or what's your thoughts there?
Not really, no.
Daryl, as far as their skill sets, any comparisons between Tkachuk and Toffoli?
One guy's won Stanley Cups, been a big part of long playoff runs.
Like last year, there's a lot of new guys coming into the fold trying to fit. How long does it take to kind of see that it's going to be a good fit or personalities of new guys coming in, that it's kind of, you get a good feel as a coach that it's going to fit well?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure you ever know that. I mean, last year's training camp, we went into the season with really 10 NHL forwards. Right? We played with 11, but really, two guys were going to Stockton, right? So reason some of that fit last year is because it had to. That's the way it worked. So this year, if we could be healthy, hopefully going through training camp, then, and the way camp is, you play 4 games in 7 days, then you play 4 and 9, and then you have 5 before you play again. So the first 4 games in this next little bit here, that's opportunities for guys to, see if they're going to advance on, right? Or to see if, once Kadri gets back in, see who's going to play there. That's sort of how that shakes out. But then the last 4 games will be really critical, I think.
Is there anyone else in the lineup who you might also like to give an opportunity to play on the top right side, if someone beyond Toffoli?
Yeah, I think we got guys that, guys that can play both sides. So we're lucky with Blake Mange, Dubes, Cody, guys like that that can play both sides. So it's, again, it's not who, it's more like how.
What's important early in training camp for the group?
Make sure that the returning guys are on top of it, of the identity of our team and the strides we made as an organization. That's really important to reinforce that. And then the guys coming in, three of the guys coming in are Eastern Conference players. So it's a big change. I know from coaching guys, and it's a big change when guys come over, right? So to make that adjustment. So that's what you're trying to get in training camp is just that settled part of it, and then play the games.
Where do you see that the most, the change from East to West? Travel?
The style of game, and a lot of times you think, but how many times have you guys seen Mackenzie Weegar and Jonathan Huberdeau and Kevin Rooney? How many times have you guys seen him play live? Like, just think about it. It's not much different than us. Right? So that's an adjustment for them. They're playing against players or with players today. They might have only played once or twice. That they can, it's not very often. There's a big adjustment.
Since there was such a turnover in some key personnel, do you have a sense that this is a group that can build off of what they achieved last year, or are you kind of coming at this with a completely clean slate and identity?
Well, we became a playoff team last year and to take the next step. I said this after the last game that we lost. Only time you can become considered a good team or a favorite or the odds go up, do it again. That's the only way. You've got to make playoffs.
What would you like to see from Jacob Peltier during the camp?
Pardon?
What would you like to see from Jacob Peltier during the camp?
Well, it's not a camp. He's got, as I said, he's got 4 games this week, and he can only probably play unless he plays both against Vancouver, which is not possible. So he's going to show up as in a game. You're going to see.
Do you expect something special from him?
Special? No.
Why can Weegar and Tanev be a nice pair for you?
Well, Weegar can play big minutes. Tanev can handle. He's shown he can handle that. Whoever you put with him, right? If you look, you basically, Chris, if he's healthy, and that's the other part. That's when I break the camp up. Well, Tanny's not going to play till the end of camp, so we don't know. We'll see.
Are you just basically planning that you won't see Shillington for a while?
I think Brad answered it yesterday, and just leave it at that. Give his family and him his space and go from there.
Are you surprised that Tanev was kind of able to recover so quickly and be available through camp?
No, he's right on schedule. He had the surgery, and he's right on schedule.
We haven't talked to you since the moves of the offseason happened. Like, what was going through your head as you saw the two big signings and the big trade? And you know, how often do you talk to Brad during a summer like that?
Yeah, a lot. It's the CBA. It's a big deal. It's not like they broke up the band. One guy's unrestricted, and one guy was going to be unrestricted. That's the way it works. Had career years, that's what happens.
You talked about the importance of being strong up the middle of the ice from the goaltender. Yeah. How excited are you about what you have up the middle at forward this year?
Well, it does matter a lot. I mean, the last five games we played last year, we weren't good enough up the middle of the ice. So, lessons learned, and it's not that easy to. I'd certainly rather have top centermen than the way our division is set up to play against top centermen.
There you go. Head coach Daryl Sutter. He's back. We're back. And you get to hear Daryl on the daily again. The head coach of the Calgary Flames setting up training camp after day one of on-ice sessions. Address Kadri, address Tanev, and kind of their preseason workload. So don't expect to see either of Nazem Kadri or Chris Tanev in preseason games for a little bit here. Probably won't play the first kind of three or four before they start to get in. Probably Tanev likely wouldn't play until last one or two preseason games. It sounds like, at least as of right now, coming off his off-season shoulder surgery. Talked a little bit about why Toffoli might be a good fit there. Full camp for Toffoli. A lot to dive into with the head coach on day one of camp.
Yeah, he went a little longer than I thought he would. I was very curious to see, you know, how he was going to, for lack of a better term, manage the media today, whether he'd be long-winded, whether he'd be short and pointed with his answers. Was very unsurprised in the fact that he didn't spend too much time talking about how the summer unfolded, more so living in the here and now of the situation. Yes. Of the Calgary Flames with day one. Listen, these are the guys they have in camp, the 67 players. These are the, you know, 30 or so that will be competing for jobs on opening night. Let's focus on the here and now. Let's focus on the new guys, and let's focus on what we're going to see in the coming days.
It's good to be back at the Scotiabank Saddledome. That's where hour one of Flames Talk is coming at you from on this Thursday. Alongside Aaron Vickers from Daily Hive, my name is Pat Steinberg. Vixie's with us for the rest of the week, and then next week as well. Good to have Aaron Vickers as our co-host for the next little bit as we kick things off. First preseason game is Sunday. We are right up on our first NHL game action of the year. Flames Talk available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
This is hour one from the Scotiabank Saddledome on a Thursday. Day one on the ice of training camp for the Calgary Flames with Aaron Vickers of Daily Hive. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully you're having yourself a wonderful Thursday whenever and however you're listening. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. How about that top line for day one of training camp? So you were maybe a little less uncertain than I was, I guess, when it came to having Lindholm and Huberdeau together. Yeah. To start camp. I was pretty confident that they would get there. I just wasn't sure if Daryl was going to put them together to start training camp. And the only reason I say that is because when he joined Francis a couple of weeks ago on the Eric Francis show, he said, we got to find out whether or not he is a Lindholm player or a Kadri player. So I wondered, okay, does he start with Lindholm? Does he start with Kadri? Does he give Huberdeau a chance with both of those guys or a look with both of those guys? So I was a little more curious to see whether or not Lindholm Huberdeau as a forward pair would be together for day one. The answer to that question is absolutely they were together for day one with Tyler Toffoli on the right. We'd been talking for a while as to, you know, if it were going to be Lindholm Huberdeau, who would be that right winger, and Toffoli with the right shot just seemed like such a natural fit. But you were feeling a little bit more confident about Huberdeau and Lindholm together, hey?
Yeah, let's just pat myself on the back for that one, because, you know, why not? No, in all seriousness, to me it just makes too much sense to put your best playmaker with the guy who is now your best pure finisher. In my mind, Lindholm's the best finisher on the team, And then stacking Tyler Toffoli on top of that, who might just be your best pure finisher. We didn't see it as much probably last season as the team would have liked, but Tyler Toffoli is a goal scorer through and through. That's why you have him on your roster. That's what you pay him to do. That's what you expect from him. So to put Jonathan Huberdeau on a line with arguably your two best finishers,
yep.
To me it just makes sense from a standpoint of let's load up these guys. Let's let Huberdeau get them the puck, and then let's just see what happens.
Yep.
Now, for me, the debate more comes in with who was going to be that third piece? And obviously Toffoli now, and to me that makes a lot of sense. But there were a couple other names that I could conceivably see slotting into that spot, and I think we'll see them come in and out through training camp as we see the coaching staff shuffle things through. To me, Andrew Mangiapane was a guy to test there, and obviously Mangiapane tweaked something in summer skating and isn't going to be participating in the first few days of camp. With that, it kind of makes sense to just put Toffoli there, see what kind of chemistry develops. If any at all, it might not work, but it might work. And then another player I was kind of curious to see where he would slot throughout the opening day of training camp. But seeing where he slotted in on the lines is Dylan Dubé. Because to me, Dylan Dubé is one of those players that could conceivably play on any of your top three lines, depending on what kind of look you're going for. To me, that was sort of the wild card of, okay, where are we seeing Dubé? Are we going to see him beside Backlund, or are we going to see him in a slightly different role?
Let's dive a little deeper into this top line in a second. Before that, though, let's hear from Jonathan. He spoke to the media first. He was the second guy we spoke to following the first practice. Jonathan Huberdeau in old-school media scrum fashion, where we all got really close and crowded around and stuck things in his face. Jonathan Huberdeau spoke to the media following day one of training camp here at the Scotiabank Saddledome.
Well, day one on the ice, are you feeling any early chemistry out there?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to obviously get on the ice first day. It's always exciting. Obviously, you know, new teammates. And, yeah, I think Lindy and Toffoli, I think they're two good players. And I think, you know, I don't think I've ever played with two righties in my life. So it's cool to have that. And kind of we're going to build chemistry throughout the camp. And I'm excited to play with these guys.
Do you see yourself playing with those two players throughout most of camp and into the start of the season?
Yeah, it's going to be Daryl's decision. I mean, just here to play and be the best as I can. But obviously, they're good players. We have a lot of good players on the team, so I think it doesn't matter. But I think for the start, we're going to try to build the chemistry for sure.
What are those conversations like with Daryl when he's talking with you about who you might play with?
We haven't really talked yet like about that. But during the summer, he kind of told me that was going to be my two line mates for the start of the camp. So that was that today. But I mean, we'll see. I think we're going to have probably a chance to play a game, too. It's going to be good. I think, you know, try to learn, you know, to practice the new drills and stuff. And it's a new experience, but I'm excited for it.
When Daryl talks to you in the summer about potentially putting you with those two guys, do you watch video on them at all to maybe try and pick up on their tendencies early? And what do you see in those two players?
Yeah, I mean, I know these guys. I mean, obviously, you know, you watch a lot of hockey, but I know they're shooters. I mean, they score a lot of goals. And I'm here, I mean, I'm kind of a playmaker, so obviously I think it can be a good fit because, you know, they're going to shoot a lot of puck and hopefully score a lot of goals.
Are there some nerves, excitement? What are the emotions on a day one with a new group?
Yeah, it's exciting. A little bit of nerve. I mean, I think I messed up like the first three drills, so I mean, a little bit of nerves, but it's going to get, you know, a few days, and I think it's going to be good after that. But yeah, it was exciting. I mean, you know, Flames jersey practice, I'm excited, and I'm excited to get on the ice too for the first preseason game too.
After being in one place for so long and now in a new place, putting it on for the first time, does it feel real now that you're on a new team?
Yeah, it does. I mean, all I was, you know, people were talking about is the trade in the summer, so just excited to kind of turn the page from that and, you know, focus on this year and, you know, go win a Stanley Cup. And I think that's what I want to do. I just want to get, you know, get going and try to focus on this year.
What traits do you look for in a centerman? What's your ideal centerman? And what was your first impression of Elias and being on the ice with him?
Yeah, Elias is such a good player. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. We got Naz, you know, we got Bax too. I mean, we got great centermen. So it doesn't really matter. But, I mean, these guys are just skilled player. And it's nice to get the puck to guys. You're going to get it back. And I think first experience today was great.
Jonathan, you've really reached a different plateau in the last 2 or 3 years after such high expectations coming out of junior. what's really grown in your personal game for you over the last little while?
I think I'm more mature, more responsible defensively too as well. I mean, play penalty killing last year kind of really helped me to kind of stay in the game. You know, you're not sitting on the bench as well, and I took pride in that as well. So, and for me, it's just, you know, obviously you get, it's kind of your prime, you know, 27, 28 years old. And I just feel it's confidence as well. I mean, I know what I can do on the ice and use more my body. I'm a little bigger than I was before, so I think that would be it. And after, you're kind of, you know, I know I'm a good player and I can make some plays, and that's all you do.
What would qualify this season as successful for you? Is it a personal benchmark, like breaking 100 points again? Is it getting this team past the second round? Is there just a benchmark that you're hoping to hit?
First, I mean, obviously you want to win your division. That's what we think about. Personally, I don't really care about the points. I mean, yeah, last year I had a lot of points, but we got swept in the second round, so that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I want to be a good player in a regular season, but a better player in the playoffs, and that's what I want to do. And I think this team is a good team, and we can do some damage if we, you know, play well in the regular season and after in the playoffs.
Daryl really values fitness. How did testing go for you yesterday?
Yeah, it was good. It was hard. It's hard every year, but it was good. I think the guys are in good shape, and we're ready for camp.
That's Jonathan Huberdeau as he spoke to us here at the Scotiabank Saddledome following day one of training camp on a line with Tyler Toffoli and Elias Lindholm, and talked a lot about that right there. We see them together on day one. We expect, if everybody's healthy, Huberdeau, Lindholm, whether it's Toffoli or somebody else, those two will be a pairing to start the regular season. I would be shocked if even if we see him with Kadri or so, I would be shocked if those two guys aren't together to start night one against the Avalanche.
Yeah, if I'm sitting in front of a whiteboard trying to draw up opening night lines for the Calgary Flames, like, you're just going to start doing it in pairs, I think. I think that's been the general approach for teams and coaches and general managers when building lineups or rosters, is instead of trying to slot three guys together, you're trying to slot two guys and then adding a third to complete the trio. And to me, it just makes sense that Huberdeau, with everything that he can do on the ice offensively, with his vision, his passing, his puck handling, his playmaking, and this isn't to disparage Elias Lindholm, because Elias Lindholm's a great puck handler. He has good vision as well. But I just, every time I see Elias Lindholm in the offensive zone, and this might be a product of Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, but he was just a shooter, and he was a great shooter, and he, I mean, 42 goals last season. It's hard to argue
he's probably
that kind
got
of production.
The best pure release shot on the team. I think it's probably fair to say.
I don't think
Lindholm
it's the fastest. I don't think it's the heaviest, but I think it might be the quickest actual release.
And super deceptive. And yes. I remember the first time, look, I did not, you know, you know about Elias Lindholm, and you know about him because I was most acutely aware of him because he was the guy who went right before Sean Monahan at the 2013 NHL draft. Yep. And the 2013 draft was such a big one in my mind because it was the first draft after Jerome, and they had the three first-round picks. So I always remember the way things went. I always remember how that draft came together. And it felt like Monahan was telegraphed at 6, but, you know, you're like, okay, well, what if Lindholm is still available at 6? And he wasn't. He goes number 5 to Carolina. That was and coming in, you know, the book on Lindholm was, yeah, we're talking about a guy that and I remember vividly writing it down on my International Scouting Service, the ISS paper that I had with, I remember writing it down. Well, now future considerations, by the way, is our draft specialty guide, with thanks to Derek Neumeier. At the time, though, I was writing on the ISS page. They don't even exist anymore. They're not competition. And I remember writing down Patrice Bergeron. That was the guy that I wrote down beside Elias Lindholm, because that was one of the comparables that we had. But I didn't know a ton about him. So they acquire him, and he's been playing in Carolina, and the numbers aren't all that superb. And he scored a goal in a game early in the year against the Colorado Avalanche in 18-19. It was the year that Johnny won the game in overtime, and Riddick was celebrating before. Remember that the pick? Riddick
was that
already,
that long ago?
Yeah, it was 2018.
Oh.
Remember Riddick celebrating and his arms in the air?
I had
Johnny
hair.
Hadn't even scored. Yeah, you hadn't picked that thing yet. And so Lindholm scored a game-tying goal with like 90 seconds to go. And he walked in and was just to the left of the high slot, and he absolutely wired it. And I remember thinking to myself, my goodness, I did not know he had that deceptive and quick a shot, and it stuck with me ever since. And he scored 30 that year, whatever it was, at 70-plus points, scored 40-plus last year.
Yeah.
I think he's the best finisher on the team when it comes to goal scoring.
Now, this training camp is all going to be about who can discover chemistry with who and who meshes well with whom, so on and so forth. There is a chance that they just don't click together, and then we see different sets of duos and maybe a third added in here, sprinkled in. There is a chance that it just doesn't work between the two. And we've seen it before in numerous instances where, okay, this player A and player B should be dynamite together, and for some reason it's like flipping over the magnets and they retract instead of, you know, clasp together. I assume that's what science is. There's an off chance that Huberto and Lindholm don't click, but just – everything I've seen from Elias Lindholm, obviously I got much more of a body of work on watching him play, but seeing the highlights of what Huberto does and who he's done it with, it just seems like it's a natural fit for those two to find something together.
Huberto, one of his best seasons and probably his best even strength season in the NHL, came on the left side of Alexander Barkov a number of years ago, and I see a lot of similarities in the way Barkov and Lindholm affect a game of hockey, and so they're both two-way beasts. They both are really strong finishers. I think Huberto will be a really good fit on. I think come day one those two will be together, and I think Toffoli's got a good chance of sticking there. I really do, because he's got a right shot. They don't have a lot of natural right shot right wingers, and I know Matthew Tkachuk did a great job moving to his off wing, but I don't know if Andrew Mangiapane is as effective on the right side as he is on the left. All of my prior viewings would suggest no, he's not, and that could change with experience and maturity and all that type of stuff, but everything that I've seen, I prefer Mangiapane on the left to the right side. I think he's a more effective player on his natural wing. Well, Matthew Tkachuk became as effective, if not more effective, as the ice opened up for him, but not everybody goes that way. Well, Tyler Toffoli's a natural right winger, and he's got a really solid outside shot as well. Now you've got one of the best distributors in the NHL that can get pucks to guys in scoring areas, but also these two guys don't need to be in the house area to score their goals. They're really, really accurate outside shooters too. On paper, I think the line makes a ton of sense. I think Toffoli, if with a full camp, you heard Daryl earlier this hour talk about what having a full camp could mean to Tyler. I wouldn't be surprised if that guy's in the 25 to 30 goal range this year if that line clicks the way we think it could.
Well, I think that should be the expectation regardless of where Tyler Toffoli is slotting, to be perfectly honest, whether he's going to be in a top six role. I think that's not automatic, but as close to automatic as you can get. That's where he's most effective, is in an offensive role finishing plays, and he's going to have the opportunity to finish more plays alongside Jonathan Huberto than, I'll say, Nazem Kadri. And just to circle back on the Andrew Mangiapane debate and going back even a little further with Matthew Tkachuk, to me, Matthew Tkachuk was very much an east-west player. So when he's on his off wing, he's opening up his body to the middle of the ice. That's why I think we saw Matthew Tkachuk flourish so much playing on the right side. To me, Andrew Mangiapane is more of a north-south player who, you know, he shoots off in a straight line and then he'll go into the corners and retrieve and start the cycle that way. I think Mangiapane having success or not having success on the right side, it's not fair to compare him to the job Matthew Tkachuk was able to do on the right side. And for me, and not to peel back a layer on another debate where, okay, what does the second line look like? To me, playing Andrew Mangiapane and Nazem Kadri together would drive opponents nuts in my mind. And so
I'm
we're
in
talking
love
about,
with that
so
potential
we're, so we're
combo.
Talking about, you know, pairs and adding Toffoli to the top pair. Seeing a pair of Andrew Mangiapane and Nazem Kadri together, like, I'm almost more curious to see how that would unfold as opposed to Huberto Lindholm, because I just assume Huberto Lindholm is just going to click automatically.
What is your feel on, I mean, Toffoli is now, I'm feeling optimistic about Toffoli, but some aren't. I've had a number of people text in talking about how Toffoli, you know, they fear that maybe he's going the Monahan route and his game is on the way down because he's not an elite NHL skater. Because we're talking about a guy who's now 30 years old, there are some who are worried about Toffoli on the downward trend. And I can somewhat understand that because of the second half of his tenure. He was so good early. The first 15, yep. 20 games here, he was almost point per game. He was exactly what they needed. The final 15 games or so, he kind of fell off a cliff offensively and really started to become more detrimental on the ice than he was helping the team. But I thought he really, I know the numbers weren't there in the playoffs, but I thought he was one of their two or three most effective forwards game in, game out in the postseason. He scored a massive goal in Game 7 against the Stars. I really liked Toffoli in the playoffs, and that gave me, especially looking back and removing yourself from being in the midst of that playoffs, that's a really encouraging sign for me. That, yes, he did drop off for a 15-game stretch or so, and the offense and the effectiveness really waned. Full training camp, dove into the conditioning, didn't go to the Stanley Cup final that went into July. Like, he got a full off season. I'm feeling really optimistic about the year Toffoli could have. And you said he's going to be a top six guy. I agree. He wasn't in Calgary last year. He straddled top six and middle six. Sometimes he wasn't a top six role. Sometimes he was getting PP1 minutes. Sometimes he was playing third line minutes and on the second power play. I think he's going to be a bona fide, no question, top six guy this year. And I think we'll see some big time numbers rebounding from him.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with any of that. Yeah, in 74 games, so yep. Like in another 8 games, maybe he gets another 2 or 3. Like, he's a very streaky scorer. He always has been. I feel like he always will be. In the playoffs, he only had the 2 goals in 12 games. You would have liked to see a little bit more production on that front. Then again, you would have liked to see production from anybody in that series against Dallas with the job that Jake Oettinger did. But this is going to be a guy that's going to be given a top 6 role. I don't think there's any debate or question about that, especially with how the right side for the Calgary Flames slots. I'm not necessarily so concerned about his skating or where he sort of fits in on a downward slope of, or his trajectory. I think we're going to see an improved Tyler Toffoli this season. He's still only 30, but now I can just imagine, you know, Huberto charging down the left side, Lindholm coming down the right side, and then Tyler Toffoli is the third guy trailer. He's going to get hit with a lot of drop passes in the slot, which is the home plate area, which is his prime scoring area. I think we're going to see, optimistically, a Tyler Toffoli who, you know, comes close to scoring 30 goals next year.
Couple of texts, 960-960. Toffoli got hurt. That's why his scoring went down. They never announced the injury, but he was playing hurt. If he's healthy, he'll score. And maybe he was playing through something. Maybe there was a...
There's nobody that wasn't.
At that, especially yeah. At that stage of the year? Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned, and I want to jump into this in a second, so I'll skip that text until I read this one, or after I read this one. It says, Huberto made Sam Bennett look like a top six guy. Lindholm should absolutely thrive with him on the left wing. And then this one came in, because before we heard from Jonathan Huberto, you said, you know, a couple of other guys that you could see playing with Jonathan and Elias, and one of the names was Mangiapane. And this text comes in, says, Mangiapane produced his best offense playing third line minutes in the first 30-ish games and disappeared on the scoreboard when moved up. Well, I would counter that with, I don't think they were third line minutes. They were second line minutes. He was playing on the Backlund line, which at that time it was Lindholm 1C, Backlund 2C.
Yep.
So it was top 6 minutes. But yes, he did produce in, he was not in a top line role. Whether or not he put a lot of goals up early or not, he still scored 35 last year, and he's been on pace for 20 plus the prior 2 seasons. I'm really not worried about Andrew Mangiapane as a hockey player. I think he is a top 6 NHL forward. I think he can get you 20 to 30 every year. And the most important thing about Mange is that he is effective in any role you put him in and can play against top players. He's smart in the two-way game. He's tenacious as all hell. That's why I'm with you. I love the idea of Mangiapane and Kadri as a forward pair. I think that would be outstanding, and maybe we will see that. But if they were to put him on a line, like if they wanted to see Toffoli play with Kadri and see Mangiapane on the right with Lindholm and Huberdeau, I think he'd be successful there. I don't think he's a guy that would be over his head in that regard.
Not at all, and I don't necessarily worry about, you know, if and when and, you know, Mangiapane scored these goals. 35 is still 35, and I'd be curious, and I'm sure there's a site out there, and Pat, you can probably look it up as I ramble along, but I really wonder about Andrew Mangiapane's depth of goal or distance of the goals scored, because he thrived just outside of the blue paint. Like, he's going to the areas that NHL goals are made and areas that are tough to get to, but you have to get to in order to score. Like, he isn't sitting there, you know, he wasn't gifted too many of these goals, of these 35 goals that he scored this year. He knows how he has to play to generate offense, and he's only ever really played that way, even back in junior in Barrie. And so I wouldn't expect anything less out of Andrew Mangiapane this season, which to me makes him an attractive option for being on that top line, because he's going to be the guy that drives straight to the net, creating havoc for that trio.
Yeah. It's
but again, Nazem Kadri and Andrew Mangiapane together, like, that's got to be an experiment, right? You got to see that.
And I wonder, you know, I wonder about, does Milano get an opportunity there at some point? You mentioned Dubé. Does he get a shot? And Blake Coleman's played plenty of time on the right side. And, you know, Coleman has scored 20 or come close to 20 a few times in this league. I think Coleman's the type of guy that can play up and down your lineup. And if you need him in a, you know, middle six shutdown role, he excels. And I think he's just fine if you put him with, you know, more highly skilled guys and more of an offensive role. I think he could absolutely be a guy that could fit in a line. So they definitely have some options.
Yeah, Blake Coleman to me would be another interesting option on that top line, because what if you asked Blake to maybe handle a little bit more of the heavy lifting on the defensive side of that line? I don't think it's any question that Elias Lindholm was asked to, you know, keep an eye on things when you're out there with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. So what happens if you take a little bit of the defensive responsibility off Elias Lindholm, let him really get going with Jonathan Huberdeau, and ask a guy like Blake Coleman, who, like you said, has been in and around 20 goals for, you know, three or four seasons of his NHL career, get him focusing more on the defensive side of that trio and really letting those other two guys go. I think that could be an interesting combination as well.
One thing that I really like about these forward groups, maybe they don't have a line that's as dominant as Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Tkachuk was last year. It's tough to find that on a yearly basis, especially when two-thirds of it are no longer here. That line was the best line in the NHL during the regular season last year. The most consistent line, the line that played the most together. Their numbers were off the charts, both in terms of counting goals for, goals against, and also the underlying possession scoring. Like, they were a dominant line.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it.
Maybe they don't have that dominant a line again, but there's also not going to be as much of a gap from line to line to line as there was last year, especially when they put, I felt, and this is just me, but when they put Backlund, Coleman, and Mangiapane together, I thought that they had the ideal number two line, and the gap from the Lindholm line to the Backlund line was a whole lot less. Other times when they didn't have that, I felt like there were significant gaps. Now, but then, and then there was a big gap from Backlund's line to Yarncroke or Monahan or whoever was the 3C. Now, I don't think you're talking about huge steps from Lindholm to Kadri or Kadri to Backlund or Lindholm to Backlund or whatever you're looking at. I think there's, you know, there's a lot more. I guess they're a little bit closer to being on the same plane than some of the lines were last year, and that really excites me about the potential of this group this year.
Well, I don't think there's any debating, in all due respect to Gaudreau and Tkachuk, but there's no debate in my mind that this year's top nine is better than last year's top nine, especially how you see how players slot, and you hear it every day. We heard it today with Daryl Sutter saying, well, their centers weren't very good against the Edmonton Oilers last year. Well, now you've got arguably the deepest three centers in the NHL. I don't think it's number one, but it's certainly top five. And if you're rolling out Lindholm, Kadri, Backlund as your 1-2-3, chances are you're going to win more matchups than you lose. And all of a sudden, you've got nine players that you're comfortable with interchanging. If something's not flowing right one game, or if you want to get a different look here, or you want to get a different defensive matchup there, you have the ability to kind of interchange every piece of that top nine, which I don't think you necessarily had the luxury of doing last year. As you said, the gaps between line one and line two, if we're going to number lines, and line two and line three again, if we're going to number lines, which the organization maybe doesn't. But if you as a fan or if us as media are going to label lines, the gaps between those three lines are much smaller than I think they were a year ago.
Wrap it up. Hour one of Flames Talk from the Scotiabank Saddledome with Aaron Vickers of Daily Hive. Check him out on Twitter at AA Vickers, and Steinberg with you as well. Day one on the ice, training camp in the books. Hour one of Flames Talk is available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and wherever you get your podcasts.